Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
So here at ITV News at just gone 4:30 in the morning, we are calling it for Leave to Win this referendum. An extraordinary moment in British history.
Man, a little bit of room. And he took the shot and he scores magnificently. Ramsey's corner, Williams! Ashley Williams for Wales!
Mr. Trump hasn't just won Ohio, he's won it big time. 12-point lead on that latest projection. And in modern times, the way Ohio goes has been the way the country has gone.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me is Jonathan Wilson. And with us is Ellis James, comedian and broadcaster. Ellis, pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
No, it's good to see you smiling already.
Yeah. And the reason... It's because you described me as a broadcaster, which is an inherently funny
word. It is, yeah. Indeed.
And a comedian and bon viveur, Ellis James.
comedian and TV funny man.
Oh,
is
God.
Next.
I mean, if you've seen my
your output,
my terrible appearances on some quite low rent talking head shows.
You'd want a funny man though, rather than a comedian or just amusing bloke.
I mean, when I was on 8 out of 10 Cats, I was very quiet. Really didn't pull my weight.
Well, today we're going to go back a few years, of course, to Euro 2016. Wales 3, Belgium 1. I mean, if anybody out there, dare I suggest, doesn't know you, Ellis, they will have picked up from your accent that it's pretty obvious why you chose this game. Yeah. But why did you choose this game?
I think if I were on a desert island, it would be the one game of football I could just watch again and again. I occasionally say that my favourite match was the Russia 3-0 because we were just so comfortable from the start because they were terrible, that Russian team. But more than anything,
they couldn't even beat England.
But they were rubbish, yeah. And we were very comfortable from the start. Whereas, you know, Belgium got out the traps very quickly in this game. I think the reason it's probably, certainly for my money, the most iconic moment in Welsh sport is that, you know, a country the size of Wales reaching the semi-final of a major international tournament is an enormous achievement. Before we started rolling, I said we're the smallest country ever to have reached an international semi-final.
And Jonathan went quiet.
Jonathan went quiet. He was fact-checking me. He will claim that Uruguay in the 30s, smaller country. But again,
Wales' population now is 3.1 million.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be surprised if it's grown by more than 0.1 of a million since 2016. So let's call it 3 million.
Let's call it 3 million. Yeah.
Uruguay's population now is 3.5 million.
Yeah.
It would have been lower than 3 million in 1930. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
And probably also in 1950.
But Wales' population in the 30s was also smaller.
Yes, but you didn't win the World Cup.
No, but what I'm saying is, I would say that Uruguay are always a bigger country than Wales.
Are you saying pound for pound?
Pound for pound. Yes, pound for pound.
And had you won the World Cup in the 1930s, that would be relevant. Yeah.
Well, also, I mean, frustratingly, had we been allowed to compete in the World Cup, I think we'd have done all right because we won the home international championships three times in the 30s. We had a good side in the 30s. Yeah. But obviously, you know, British football being what it was, we never got to prove that on the international stage.
Yeah. But the often held down, but in Euro 2016, not so.
Well, the thing with Welsh football, and that the reason that tournament has such a hold on us is that I think we were in with a shout of qualifying with a game to go in 11 different qualifying campaigns. So there's the obvious failures that even most casual football fans will remember, the Russia playoff in 2003 for Euro 2004, losing to Romania in 93 for USA 94, Paul Bordier missing the penalty.
That was a particularly hurtful one.
Yes, yeah. And you know, that was a good side. You had Giggs and Rush and Hughes and Saunders and Southall and Gary Speed. But we just couldn't get over the line. And that Romania team was a very good side as well. And they went on, did they reach the semi-finals?
Quarters, I think.
Georgie Hargi, you know, really good team. And then obviously you've got the playoff against Scotland in 77, the Joe Jordan handball, the penalty that should never have been given. 85.
I haven't to look at that again. You know, while researching this, the commentary on the Joe Jordan handball is amazing.
Yeah,
Archie McPherson going,
oh, it's Archie. Hey,
a great clear penalty, greatly given.
And what's frustrating about that in particular is I'm sort of against VAR, but that really would have sorted us out because it's so obvious in the replay because the Welsh players are in short sleeves and Joe Jordan's got a long sleeve
navy shirt.
If you're going back to late 70s and talking about VAR. Then.
Yeah. So, that one hurts and obviously failing to beat Scotland at Ninian Park in 85, the night Jock Steen died and not qualified for Mexico 86. They're the sort of the classics. Mm. And then you have the
light. There's a lot there.
Oh, there's more. There's so many more. There's the lights going out at the Vetch when we played Iceland in 81. And we were playing well, and then the game was held up for 45 minutes because they, you know, a generator, there'd been a fire, so the floodlights had gone out, and the Welsh team never regained their composure. We ended up drawing 2-2, failed to qualify in goal difference, failed to qualify for 84 on goal difference.
It's remarkable. I didn't realise it was this.
Came quite. I mean, there's not really an international record like it. I don't think we came quite close to qualifying for the 72 Euros. I would argue that we qualified for Euro 76, but we got to the quarterfinal, and technically the tournament didn't begin until the semis. It was a 4-team tournament. So then we didn't qualify for Euro 92.
I would argue we qualified for Euro 76.
Who beat you in the quarters?
We lost to Yugoslavia. Again, dodgy penalty decision, all that kind of stuff. The thing with Euro 92, we beat Germany, first team to have beaten them since Italia 90. Mm-hmm. So we beat them 1-0 in Cardiff. We beat Belgium 3-1 at home, and then drew 1-1 out in Brussels. Came second in the group. But Euro 92 was an 8-team tournament.
That's right, yeah.
8 teams.
How about England and
Scotland qualified?
England and Scotland qualified for it, yeah.
So, you know, and again, that team was Rush, Hugh, Saunders, Ratcliffe and Southall. You know, a good sort of... Ryan Giggs came right in at the tail end. So we got stuffed out in Nuremberg, and Giggs made his debut, come on as a sub. So, you know, there are more.
I mean, it's a remarkable.
It just kept happening.
Because, I mean, Scotland have that thing, of course, that they've never gone past the first round of a tournament, but they've been at plenty of tournaments. Well, whereas Wales, they have gone past, well, before, obviously, 1958 World Cup, but they hadn't qualified since 58. Well, and it'd been a long, long time.
Well, I've got the 1990 shoot annual.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a great statistic in that. It was a table of average performances at major international tournaments. Wales were like fifth. Because we got to one World Cup, we got to the last eight. So we're right below like Brazil or Argentina.
Yeah. You got West Germany, now Germany, Brazil.
It's just real. I remember as a sort of 9-year-old, and that was my awakening for international sport. And my dad had told me, he told me about Scotland in 85, and we got a terrible group for Italia 90. We were in the same group as Holland and Germany, West Germany. So he told me these hard luck stories. My dad had lost interest by that point because he was like, it's just not going to happen. We're jinxed. And there was a real feeling that Wales were jinxed. But I remember looking at that table and thinking, can I feel pride in this? Because that's a stupid table. Yeah. So we got to...
You got to take any victory.
Yeah. So, and the thing with the 76 team, so you had players like Toshack and Terry Orath and Alan Curtis and Robbie James. Leighton James, who was a very good winger, played for Burnley and the Swans.
And Sunderland, let's not forget
that. Sunderland, yeah. Well, they then made some... I mean, he was a pundit on Welsh telly for a bit. And that playoff when Wales... played Russia. I think Russia, they lost a game at home for 25 years or something ridiculous. So we got a 0-0 out in Moscow. So that's a really fantastic result. And then we had to play them in Cardiff. And
so this is for?
For Euro 2004 under Mark.
Right, yeah, I was there. I was at the game in Cardiff.
So we were, I was there as well. Horrible, horrible night. But anyway, so we lost. So we lost 1-0 the night before they were in the build up. They had, you know, they would have had Ollie Hines, who was doing the Welsh coverage at the time, the anchor, and they would have had John Toshack probably, and then Leighton James. And John Toshack, you know, he was quite measured in his analysis, and they said, Leighton, what do you think? And he went, well, I think we're going to beat them 4 or 5-0, easy. John Artson, Sam Davis, Craig Bellamy, Ryan Giggs, they just can't compete with us. And then we sort of went 1-0 down after 20 minutes and limped out. And it was really horrible because in those days, incredibly, Wales were the most well-supported team in European football. Because with the Millennium Stadium had just been built. So
they used to, it was regularly filled, wasn't
regularly,
it?
Yeah, we sold out for Azerbaijan at home, 74,500 people to watch Azerbaijan.
Be put to the sword.
Yeah, 4-0.
Yeah.
So, and the thing with the Millennium Stadium at the time was it was a real draw. People were going just because they wanted to see the new ground, you know, because it had been built for the 99 Rugby World Cup. So, yeah, so we beat Italy in that campaign 2-1, Simon Davis and Craig Bellamy scoring the winner. And then we really ran out of steam in that campaign. And then the game against, I think it must have been Serbia, was postponed because of a political assassination. And Hughes was a very cautious manager. So Rob Earnshaw, who is one of those players, the smaller countries tend to have these players where if you talk to an Englishman or an English person, they'll laugh at the idea that Robert Earnshaw's sort of deadly at international.
Well, is it sort of the David Healy kind of James McFadden? Yeah. To a lesser extent, I know Fadden wasn't a forward, but he would play better for Scotland than he did for...
Yeah, so, you know, he scored the winner against Germany on his debut. Yeah, there's a great picture of him sort of... He's literally a foot shorter than Oliver Kahn. And he's they're chest to chest looking at each other. And he would bang them in for Wales. And the whole ground wanted Hughes to put him on, and he didn't put him on until 60 minutes, and he played him wide on the right. It was really, you know, it was last chance saloon. He should have, he should have just gone for it, because we did limp out to that game. But we, you know, if I can talk about how Welsh fans felt going into Euro 2016, we're just pleased to be there.
So the qualifying campaign for Euro 2016, under Chris Coleman, of course, they seemed to have a plan, they seemed to know their jobs, and they had their formation. It was usually a 3-5-2, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
well,
Bale, five at the back, really.
Yeah, and Bale was float around with Hal Robson-Kanu, I think.
The Coleman's genius was that we'd, like lots of smaller countries, we tended to have one or two good players.
Yeah.
Who you couldn't quite fit into a coherent formation, but you obviously have to pick them. So when Wales beat Belgium 3-1 in October 1990, what was great about that game was that Jorath finally worked out how to play Rush, Hughes and Saunders in the same team.
Yeah.
So Hughes dropped into midfield. So all along we'd always had, it's a bit like Scotland and their glut of great fullbacks. What do you do with that?
Yeah. It's annoying.
Scotland, seven great centre midfielders, three great left backs, nobody else.
Exactly. Yeah. Or would it be Slovenia who'd have...
Two great goalkeepers, Oblak and Handanovic.
And Handanovic, I mean...
Cameroon with Berlin and Gono.
Yeah, he's gutting when you have that sort of, you know...
Yeah, so this time round, and what had been quite frustrating certainly in the 80s, in the early 90s, was you had Russian Hughes. And one of them scored in the first 10 games they played together. So you thought, my God, this is quite the partnership. Because obviously it was around the time, I think Hughes made his debut in 1980, Russia a bit before that. But 86, 87, you know, Hughes is on the way to Bayern and Barcelona, Russia on the way to Juventus, two really good strikers. But we just nowhere in midfield to get them the balls. They were living off scraps. Whereas by Coleman's era, everything was designed to get the best out of Bale and Ramsey.
Yeah.
So we had a very stingy defence. I think in qualifying, we only conceded 4 goals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He sorted them out defensively.
So defensively, we very rarely got beaten and didn't concede many. And then you had players like Hal, and they players like Hal Robson-Kanu, his job was to stretch defences and run into channels and be a nuisance and just allow Bale and Ramsey a little bit of space to play. And also you had players like Johnny Williams, who's a, you know, championship level, is a very good little dribbler.
Mm.
So he was sent on, and whereas Messi is sent on to dribble past 5 players and score, Johnny was sent on to dribble past 2 players and then get fouled, and then Bale would score from the resultant free kick. That was a tactic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we scored our first goal against Slovakia in the first game.
Mm. But you're right. Coleman saw what he had, and he really made use of it. But I it was really good what he did with Bale, because Bale being just that left winger often for, you know, Spurs, and then we go to Real Madrid. He often played him, sometimes he played him on the right to cut in, basically like, you're our goal threat, mate, so you've got to do that. But then actually to give him that sort of more freer role. And Bale loved playing for Wales, still does.
He still does, and I think he...
Just like Ryan Giggs.
But he emotionally really fits into that team.
He does. So, it's quite remarkable that, considering he goes off and he's one of the highest, you know, the biggest transfer fees of all time, wins the Champions League, blah, 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 blah. Yet when he plays for that Wales side, he seems to be one of the lads.
And he
which I think is a very kind of rare thing. You look at, say, Samuel Eto'o with Cameroon.
Yeah.
And
Adebayor, I know that very different cultures and different landscapes and so on.
You talk to loads of people around the Cameroon set up and they go, oh, well, think about that, Thomas, you were so arrogant. I remember when he bought us all watches. What? Like, isn't that a nice thing? No, he was just showing how rich he was.
Yeah.
And
you're
sort of like, I don't understand. I mean, I can see how that could be the case, that's how it could be interpreted. So getting the tone right, if you're the outstanding player.
Yeah.
And Bale seems to get that. He seems to be able to be the best player, but also to get everybody else.
Well, he's very close to players like Chris Gunter, and he's also a real Cardiff boy.
Yeah.
So a lot of his, I think a couple of mates of his from school, I think he employs them. Mm. Oh, they're out with him in Madrid. I think one's his driver.
What a show off.
One's his three iron.
Well, I interviewed him a couple of years ago. And I heard them all walking down the corridor, and it was like being in the corridors of Whitchurch High, where he went to school, because they were his friends from school.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great video that went viral of a couple of Christmases ago. He's a player at Real Madrid, and he was on the rec where he used to play football as a kid growing up, playing against his mates. He scores this sort of 35-yard free kick in the rain. It's like on Boxing Day, and all his mates are like, "Whoa!" And he's very Welsh. Like, he's building this incredible house in Cardiff.
Mm.
And when I interviewed him, I said, what will you do then after you've retired? He said, oh, I'll just move back to Cardiff, so where my family are. And he just genuinely seems to love it.
Yeah.
And also, sadly, I think we've probably seen the best of him. But Christ, 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 2013, 14, 15, he was just astonishing.
Well, he was a world beater. But he still puts it in for Wales. So you had him in that side. We still do. Ramsey as well, two genuinely brilliant players. I mean, Bale's in a category of his own.
Well, Ramsey was in the team of the tournament in 2016 and had a better tournament than Gareth. And obviously, he didn't play in the semi. And it's the classic Wales story. John Charles didn't play in the quarterfinal against Brazil. Mark Hughes didn't play against Romania in that game in 93, and we missed out on Ben Davis and Aaron Ramsey because of two bookings, which cost us, So you can't really do it without one of those two.
But he had a spine to his side, can't
Well,
he?
I mean, Ledley and Allen, they're sort of just neat, tidy,
very
reliable
important.
Midfielders, aren't they?
Well,
so they provide the platform.
But that's the spine, though. You've got, your goalkeeper, Hennessy, Williams in front. You got your midfielders. You had a distinct spine in that side. They all knew their jobs. All knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you compare them to that England side, which comparisons were obviously made, of course, despite England beat Wales. I mean, Wales, I think, won the war, if there is a...
Yeah.
If you see what I mean, even though that's
finished top of the group, and
And had a fast, superior tournament. But England... Well, I don't want to talk about England. We're talking about Wales. But they that's the thing that impressed everybody, that this system that they had... And the formation, it seemed to be getting the best out of everybody.
It was ultra. We were ultra disciplined, and every player knew their role. So, Gunter, I think Chris Gunter's 31, so he was in his mid 20s in 2016. He already had like 80 caps or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, because what had happened was, and after Mark Hughes left, Toshack took over, and Toshack's won the league in six different countries, and he took the Swans from the fourth to the first division and won the league twice with Madrid and all this kind of stuff. But he wound up a lot of our senior players. They didn't like him because he was a very hard-hitting pundit. So you read biographies of the players in that Hughes team, and they would troop into the dressing room after a defeat, turn the telly on, and Toshack was hammering them. They would be throwing boots at the telly and all this kind of stuff. And he wanted to get rid of players like Robbie Savage, I think.
That's fair, though.
Yeah, so he wanted us to play football, but because all of our senior players left, we were playing our under 20s at senior level. Ramsey was captain of the team when he was, I think, 20 or 21. Mm. And that team grew up together, but they bonded because they took some real hammerings.
Mm.
By the time 2016 came around, they were relatively young, but they all had a huge experience. It was sort of... Gareth Bale had around 60 caps, Ramsey not far off, and players like Joe Allen. I think the reason we failed to qualify for the World Cup in 2018 was that Wales tend to play well or get good results if Allen, Ramsey and Bale are in the team. Those three are in the team, we tend to do all right. But in that qualifying campaign, it was, two of the three usually.
Mm.
And in the game against Ireland, where we failed to beat them in Cardiff, lost 1-0. Bale was in the stands and Allen went off after 20 minutes with a concussion, and Ramsey was trying to do it all on his own. So that's the thing. There's not a huge amount of strength and depth, but
yeah,
our first 11 was quite a decent one.
Indeed. All right, let's have a quick break, and after which we'll talk about the games at Euro 2016.
Kicked in towards Robson. Kanu, Taylor's available. What a turn! What a goal! What a goal from Hal Robson Kanu!
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In towards Vokes! Vokes!
Welcome back to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with Blizzard, everybody. So, let's talk about the tournament itself. Wales, their first game, they play Slovakia, and they win 2-1. So it's a great start to the tournament. And Wales hadn't been at a tournament, of course, since 58.
I would count 76 and the players count 76.
Okay,
The players really feel that they've been forgotten, the 76 team, because they did reach the quarterfinals. It was a four-team tournament. What's a four-team tournament?
Well, even if we take 76 into account, it's still a long time.
It has been a long time. It's still before I was born.
Something we can agree on.
I'm almost 40.
Why not count 92 as well, then, if you nearly got into the last row?
Anyway, they were at Euro 2016. They qualified for that. There's no doubt about it. They participated in that tournament.
And just a point that annoying people who don't know what they're talking about make is they say, oh, the expansion to 24 teams was great because it allowed teams like Wales and Iceland. No, Wales and Iceland would have qualified for a 16-team tournament.
Yeah.
It was still
Northern Ireland would have done as well, wouldn't they, I think? I think they took
I mean, yes, I think they would have done, yeah. But the point is that, you know, unless you have an incredibly sort of stratified coefficient system, the best teams tend to get there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wales, Iceland, Northern Ireland all got there because they deserved to get there. They didn't get there because of some charitable, here's eight more spaces.
Yeah.
And all that happened was we got a bloated tournament with loads of terrible football. Mm. And also, thankfully, some very good football.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think what I think sums up how Welsh supporters approached that Slovakia game. And I talked to friends of mine who I'd been watching Wales with for 25 years. I said, what do you want out of this? You know, as we walk into the ground in Bordeaux. And my friend said, I want to be there for the anthem, which isn't even part of the match.
Easily pleased, friend.
I just want to see the anthem.
And that'll be me.
I really want to show me internet because you just download it.
Finish my hot dog and I'm away.
And I hope that we score a goal.
Well, I think the scoring of the goal is definitely something. You see that with very small teams if they get to the World Cup. You see that with the likes of
Panama,
perfect example. Trinidad and Tobago, or maybe Jamaica, those kind of sides. But that shows you the mentality or the feeling among the Welsh supporters, because this Welsh side, as Jonathan says, qualified on merit. None of you, oh, well, they did 24-team tournament. They were there. They had good players. They had a world-class star in Bale. And you could maybe stretch that to Ramsey, but still yeah. a very, very good player. And here's, you know, some of their supporters saying, well, just as long as we score.
Yeah, and I remember in the sort of opening, I think it must be the opening 10 minutes, Hamzic beats his man. You think he's slotting it home, and it's a Ben Davis block. Fantastic block. One of the iconic moments of our tournament. And I thought, I looked at my friend, I thought, God, I think we've bitten off more than we can chew. I'm not sure I like tournament football, actually. This is horrible.
Prefer being a neutral.
Yeah. And then you know, I think Johnny Williams gets fouled, I think. And Bale scores a free kick, and we're 1-0 up. And then it's absolute...
But it changes.
Bedlam in the stands.
The belief and the hope comes in, and it's suddenly like...
Yeah, and there was... I think
we deserve to be here.
And there were 24,000 Wales fans in the ground, and more just in Bordeaux itself. You know, I think someone told me that 50,000 fans went to Bordeaux. Mm. I knew people who'd driven minibuses from Aberystwyth. Fly it, boys. I know climate change is an issue, but that's... And I talked to him. He was like one guy who was a designated driver, did the whole drive on his own.
There's something about that, though, isn't there, that makes it more romantic or makes it more, I don't know, you need to show that you're really diehard, that we drove here.
But everyone else is
We
drinking.
Skateboarded to this
it's,
ground.
But surely that's one of those, it's a good thing to have done. It's not a good thing to be doing.
Absolutely right.
But
yeah.
like Bordeaux is at the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's not Paris, is it?
Abba to London's a long way.
Yeah.
France.
But do you think the whole tournament was being played in Calais? Yeah. What do you mean you've got another 15 hours?
It's just, yeah. So there were all of these stories. And I always think the Irish are a little bit like this. It was just a party. Mm. You know, I wouldn't say that the result was secondary, but certainly we were there to have a good time.
Much like the England fans, of course.
Well, the sad thing with our support, certainly in the 90s and the early 2000s, was there'd been a real Cardiff, Newport, Swansea thing.
Mm.
And, you know, sort of England fans tended to throw, you know, garden furniture at sort of foreign police, whereas our lot tended to fight themselves.
Mm.
But there was absolutely none of that in France. Mm. And you saw Cardiff and Swansea flags, you know, sort of next to each other in the pub. And I just thought it felt, you know, surreal in that I'd never expected it to be that good.
Mm.
And I remember my dad saying, oh, you know, we'll try and go if Wales qualify for America in 94. And I remember thinking, I was in my early 20s at Euro 2004. You think, what would it be like? But it was just way better than
I could imagine. And being in a country that's obviously close by, more people can go.
Yeah, so it was far enough to be fun, but close enough to be achievable.
Yes.
As someone who is trying to sort out flights to Azerbaijan at the moment.
I'm sure.
You know, it's not a bollock to reach France.
So they beat Slovakia, then they're beaten by England.
Yeah.
Just, of course.
Having gone 1-0.
Yes, exactly. And
great half-time.
Indeed.
Loved half-time.
Well, because Bale scores the free kick, your heart should do better. But the fact is, Bale scores it from about, I don't know, 85 yards out, whatever it was.
Well, he was frightening goalkeepers.
Yes, he was.
So, you know, any time he lined up to take a free kick, there was a sort of psychological aspect, I think.
So they just missed out against England, but of course, against Russia, you mentioned earlier, they were absolutely brilliant and came through that game. And it seemed to be suddenly that they were sort of quite free scoring this Welsh side. And then the second round, they face Northern Ireland, and it's a cagey affair.
It's one of the worst games of football I've ever been to.
Otherwise,
it was atrocious.
Yeah, it was piss poor.
And I realised...
The game after it made up for that, I feel. But yes, you're right about this one.
I realised that this might be slightly against the spirit of what you're talking about, the great joy of fans being together.
Here we go.
But I remember leaving the Parc des Princes.
In tears.
I mean, pretty much in tears of frustration, having to kind of conjure...
Not a great game.
850 words out of that 1-0 win.
Yeah.
And there was three or four of us together. Like, we'll walk. And we're with Josh Robinson, who from the Wall Street Journal, who knows Paris very well. So if we just walk, we're bound to find a bistro where you can kind of, you know...
Mm.
Get a steak and some wine.
We can look forward to England-Iceland.
And we just walked and walked and walked for miles because every bistro was just full of Welsh and Northern Irish people. It was awful.
Yeah. And he would like you to apologise for that, Ellis.
It was good. It was not a great game.
But they got through it,
and
though.
And also, it was a shame because I didn't want to play a British team.
There's no glamour in that, really.
And also, we tend to... I talked to enough footballers, Welsh footballers, mm-hmm. who would deny this. But certainly... From supporters' perspective, we tend to do better when we're underdogs.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Scotland would probably say that, you know, when they used to get to tournaments, for crying out loud.
There's not many occasions when Scotland aren't underdogs.
That's true. Days. That is very true. But
crowd-pleasing Scotland.
Indeed. Indeed. But Wales, you know, they'd already played a British side in the form of England.
Yeah.
And were unlucky or very close to getting a point or something out of it, of course. To play Northern Ireland, then Wales were probably, they were favourites.
You didn't even get a foreign ref. It was Martin Atkinson.
Oh, was it?
How about that? I'd
forgotten. It was the most profound argument against the introduction of home internationals I've ever seen.
But you're right. That game, you've just got to get through it.
Yeah.
And which they did. And, you know, was it even an own goal that settled it?
It was an own goal. And I remember, and also the part of France, a lot of Welsh people had been there anyway, because that's where the French rugby team had played for decades. And it just... We huffed and puffed a lot, and it was very cagey, and there wasn't much in it.
Mm.
But I do remember there was a guy behind me, who I'm not sure if he was old enough to remember 58, but he was certainly relatively elderly, and he cried for about 5 minutes, because obviously we'd got to the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
And then from then on in, then, you know, it's just...
And you're right, there is a sort of psychological step of, hang on, we're there... I remember when Sunderland got when we beat Chelsea to get to the FA Cup semi-final in 1992, and just a sense of we are in the semi-final, and everybody's going to have to talk about us because we are there. Yeah. It's like we're a real team that you see on telly and stuff.
When the Swans went into the Premier League, was the same.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We're setting up a quarter-final with Belgium. I mean, Belgium in the group in the tournament itself, you know, they'd been beaten by Italy. It hadn't been brilliant, but then they hammered Hungary, who had an okay, I mean, relatively speaking, had a great tournament, Hungary, but they'd hammered Hungary in the second round, and then they were playing Wales. And I mean, you look at the starting lineups, you know, in the Belgium side, it included Courtois, Alderweireld, Nangalan, Witzel, De Bruyne, Lukaku, Hazard, Carrasco. Now, I understand that some of those players, you know, they were a little bit younger then, of course, as we all were, and even better now. But still, this was the Belgium side that people thought, this is the tournament where they're going to fulfil their potential.
They were ranked second in the world.
Yes, there you go.
And I think were the pre-tournament favourites, Belgium. And Mark Wilmot's the manager. You know, he wasn't getting the best out of what was on paper a really cracking team.
Oh, he frustrated me.
So
I don't know what it was like for Belgians.
So that Belgium team did well when they played against a flat back four.
Yeah.
And that in the tournament when they played well, that it was against flat back fours. Mm. They couldn't really cope with three central defenders, which is how Wales played, because it meant that De Bruyne and Hazard had less space to play with.
Mm.
So it was, and even when he made substitutions against Wales in the quarterfinals, he never really changed his formation. It was like he hadn't realised
it was going wrong.
Ellis, I mean, I've never been so certain that a coach was sort of bringing down the level of his side.
I completely agree. The 2014 World Cup, they were so, like, I mean,
especially with teams you don't watch every week.
Yeah,
I'm always a little bit cautious about being too critical of a coach because I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I don't know what they could be, but we know these players. Mm. We know what they've gone on to be, and you saw the same thing happening over and over again.
Oh, I just
talked to Christophe Terreur, the Belgian journalist based in London. He was fuming about Wilmot the whole time.
I bet he was.
The Belgian press generally were sort of at war with Wilmot by this point.
I mean, there's
feel like that great group of players, they've kind of been wasted sort of 4 years by having a nonsense manager.
It's even more profound than like what Sven did with England, with Gerard.
Are you admitting that Sven brought down the level of England?
I have never said that I liked Sven's tactics. I'm saying that what I can't get away from Sven is that he mismanaged really an amazing group of players, and even doubled down quite recently on British TV when talking about it. And yet, I can't dislike the man. And it's that charm and sophisticated...
I think it's fair to say Wilmot didn't have that charm.
Exactly, and that's the problem for Wilmot. He didn't have that.
The reason I can't dislike Sven is... in the build up to the 2002 World Cup, a 10-year-old boy shaved his hair look like Spain. Which is one of the best "I'm finally tonight" stories on the news. And I've ever
well, I get
about nine. I get, gave himself a receipt again.
But the camera goes, it pans along a load of school children and it goes past him and then it kind of cuts back. I know this because I get sent this footage weekly. I'll be
also, you know, I was living in Cardiff at the time. I was a student. So I would, that was the tournament where kickoffs was sort of 7 in the morning.
Mm.
And, you know, I would go to the pub with my English mates to watch the England games. And in the pub, there were a load of English students who had their hair like David Beckham.
Yeah, yeah.
And a friend of mine said, imagine if everyone had their hair cut like Michael Owen. Like how boring a haircut that is. And then this kid turned up. His haircut looks...
Oh, God bless that, Charles.
Also, what an incredible news story. Yeah. Him and Eureka, the only two Swedish people any people in Britain knew, are getting off with each other. Hilarious. Anyway. So,
as loathed as I am, by the way, we have to go back to Euro 2016.
So the thing with Belgium was our record against a lot of international, major international teams is bad. So our record against the Italians is bad. I think we, you know, 2 wins.
Mm.
We've never beaten Holland. I think we played them. I can't remember how many times we played them, but it's you know, we've never beaten the Dutch. We've beaten the Spanish once or twice. Our record against England is dreadful.
Mm.
But the one major team that I've always fancied us against, because our record against them is very good, is the Belgians.
Mm.
So we used to beat them. You know, Ian Rush in the build-up to this game said, oh, we'll win, we never lose to Belgium.
Mm.
And I kind of had that feeling as I walked to the ground. And obviously we'd played them in qualifying. So we'd beaten them in Cardiff. Gareth Bale had scored the winner. And then had got a nil-nil out in Brussels. So, you know, if I was going to ever be confident about Wales playing in a quarter-final, it was going to be against
Belgium. Were you confident,
Belgium,
though? Because bearing in mind some of those players that Belgium had.
Yeah, and of course, and I am, like a lot of Welsh people, naturally very pessimistic when it comes to our team. It's just, we'd played them so much because we'd played them in qualifying for the 2014 World Cup as well. So we'd got a 1-1 out in Belgium, out in Brussels. I was at a game I remember nothing about because the beer is as strong as wine, which is irresponsible. And then obviously we'd beaten them. And I think when we beat them in Cardiff, that was the first time that the players, that was in June 2015, I think, that was the first time that the players really believed that they were going to qualify. And I felt like I knew them. You know, we played the French in November 2017. In a friendly. We hadn't played France for years. We played the Spanish in a friendly quite recently. We hadn't played them for ages. You know, when I think of Spain, I think of us beating them 3-0 at the race course in 1985. The Marquise scissor kick. The Belgians, we just seemed to play them every couple of months and, you know, tended not to lose. So had we been playing, you know, Portugal or Germany, I'm not sure I'd have fancied it. But against Belgium, there was a little thing in the back of my mind that made me think, well, I don't know, actually.
Yeah. But it's a quarter final of a major tournament, so it's an awful lot riding on it.
And I didn't care because we'd got to the last.
Yeah, I think there's probably a bit of that going on. So the game starts, and it was pretty fast paced game. It was quite a frenetic pace. I mean, Ben Davis was booked after 4 minutes for quite a cynical foul, you could say, on De Bruyne.
I think it's quite soft, actually.
Do you think?
Yeah,
I think he knew what he was doing.
I think he might know what he was doing, but it's not. You know, it's not. Batiston on. It's like a Schumacher on Batiston.
Okay. It was more of a tactical foul, then, we'll say. And that puts him out for the semi final. After about 5 or 6 minutes, an incredible goal mouth scramble.
Three shots in 10 seconds.
Yeah. And Wales managed to. And so as the game starts,
so
you
that's
think.
The Lukaku cross. The 10 comes to Carrasco, sort of totally unmarked back of the box. And that's saved. And it comes back to Meunier.
Yep.
And it's cleared off a line. And as our. Follows it up and it's deflected over the bar.
Yeah. And at that stage...
Because weirdly, I'd forgotten that until I went back to look at this. And because that was the first thing that came up, I was sort of like, oh, this is one of these arty highlights packages. Put some crazy bit from the end at the beginning. Oh, no, it turned out I did have enough to 5 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, at that stage, I wasn't enjoying it.
No. Did you think to yourself, like you thought maybe against Slovakia, you thought, oh, we've really bitten off more than we can chew.
Yeah, and then here. And then Nainggolan scores from about 25.
Oh, what a goal.
30 yards.
Yeah.
Which even, after 13 minutes.
But that was an incredible, because if you think about, you know, Wales, right, we're under the cosh here. I mean, that was really from the kind of first couple of minutes. We defend deep now. And you go that deep, which is, you know, it's perfectly fine. And when he rifles in that shot from sort of 25, 30 yards.
You know, it's a real net breaker.
God, blimey.
I read a Barney Roney article about this game. And he says, as he hits it so cleanly, you can see mist coming off the ball. And so he rifles it in. Mm. And it's in the Welsh end as well. So I've sort of seen the ball in the back of the net. And Hennessy gets fingertips to it, but it's not saving that. No one's saving that. And I did think, oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Maybe you might be even thinking to yourself, keep the score line.
Well, I thought we were gonna get stuffed in front of you know, the world. And it reminded me of, I remember watching the 2005 Champions League final with a Liverpool fan. And at 3-0 down at half time, he said, I just hope this isn't embarrassing.
Well, that's what Carragher said. That he said, we don't want the record of the biggest margin of.
Yeah, and that's what my friend Sam said. He just said, I just don't want this to be embarrassing. You know, 3-0, okay, we've just lost the Champions League final, but any more than that, and it's humiliating.
It's funny though, because you can forget that a few minutes before that, Bale had an effort that hit the side net. Yeah. It wasn't a bad shot. But after the goal, you know, Wales are still, it's pretty end to end, actually.
Yeah, it's quite breakneck.
It really is, actually. I remember it being a good game of football, and obviously it was momentous from Wales's point of view, but I forgot what an incredible game it was. And 25 minutes in, Ramsey squares the ball to Taylor, who should probably score.
Yeah,
and Courtois makes a brilliant save. And I think to myself, it's one of those chances where do you think, oh, that was their chance? But I thought, no, I think there's more in it for them.
There's that amazing statistic. Taylor never scored. when he scored against Russia,
yeah,
and he needs two attempts at it, because the first attempt he cannot believe he's in that position, and he cannot believe that sort of it's effective, almost an open goal, and he cocks it up. He hadn't scored any kind of goal at all since playing for Wrexham, I think, against Grays Athletic, and I know that there was one of those defenders. Yeah, one of the press, he'd got changed in a Porter camp, he never scored for the Swans. So then, he has a chance, and you think, oh, okay. And after about 25 minutes, you know, we've got the better of them. And if you look at the stats at the end of the game, we had more, we had more chances, we had more sort of shots on target, we had more corners. And after, I think we took 25 minutes to settle down or so. But then, once we find our rhythm, we're pretty impressive.
When Ashley Williams heads that ball in from the corner. I mean, his celebration, it was like a more joyous Marco Tardelli. You know, to me, as an Englishman, that's quite an iconic celebration when Williams is celebrating. But the way he's celebrating, it's almost like he's got the winning goal with a few minutes remaining or something.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, it was an equalising goal and there's still an hour or so to play.
Well, that was a real thing from that tournament. Whenever anyone scored, they would run to the dugout.
Yeah. And they would shows the togetherness.
Yeah, there'd be a pylon with O'Shan Roberts, the coach, and Coleman, obviously, and the squad players.
Coleman doesn't miss a party.
So that's what Ashley does. And what I find frustrating about Hal's goal to make it 2-1 is, as a joke, he runs past the dugout and then runs back. I thought, oh, God, now's not the time for
him. Oh, dear. So towards the end of the first half, Williams heads over from a corner and so on. And Wales finished, the half, quite buoyant fashion. And the second half begins, and the second half sort of starts as the first half did. Belgium thinking, hang on a minute here, we should really try and put ourselves a goal up. And Lukaku puts a header just wide, which was a great chance.
And he's unmarked.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Hazard sort of fizzes one wide. De Bruyne hits one just over, and suddenly it does feel like Belgium going, right, enough's enough here.
Yeah. We've let them have this.
Indeed.
And there is a strange thing when you're watching it. I mean, I was watching it in a restaurant in Bordeaux, because I was doing France-Germany the following night.
You thought, try and find a restaurant without Wales fans.
And there's 8-10 British journalists. Actually, maybe not all British, but 8-10 journalists sitting there. And our assumption is, well, Belgium will win this eventually.
Well, I think that was everybody's assumption. really, apart from a few Welsh fans.
And it was a bit like, you know when Leicester won the league, and there's that moment when you suddenly thought, hang on, this might happen.
Yeah.
Which was when they won away at City. Mm. And there's the same thing here. When Robson Kearney scores, which is after, 55 minutes,
about that,
it was suddenly, hang on.
Yeah.
Maybe this isn't as inevitable as
we
thought.
It's always going to be their night because Belgium are missing chances. And you will surely think, hang on. And that puts doubt in the Belgian minds. That puts confidence in Wales.
And we played in a way that the Belgians found difficult to handle. Mm. So we were very compact in defence and we were good in the counter-attack with two very good attacking players.
I mean, that Hal Robson-Kanu goal. A Cruyff turn for the ages.
I mean, what people forget, he didn't have a club. He'd been released by Reading.
He said he was ineligible for the tour already.
Yeah, so briefly...
Sort of Wales' Roger Miller, almost.
Atletico Madrid briefly took an interest, apparently.
That's not true, surely.
I think what is probably true is that they saw that, realised that he was a free agent, then realised who he'd been released by and thought, well, it's one of those moments. We'll let that go. But he didn't have a club. And I think he'd scored 3 or 4 goals for Reading. Because, again, he wasn't really in... he wasn't really in the team to score goals.
When you're talking... And I understand why you were sort of talking down Robson-Kanu. Do you think that's what the Belgian defenders thought? Because he gets the ball and they seem to be worried about everybody else.
In his defence, well, there's, I think, I can't remember who it is, but there,
but
is,
he already scored in the tournament.
But there is someone he should square it to.
Mm.
And he thinks, no, I'm gonna Cruyff turn it.
This is my moment.
This is my moment.
And my it was.
And the thing with Hal.
But if he had the sense that Denier had started to move to block that pass, and he sort of realised, hang on, the space, then suddenly the Cruyff turn becomes a percentage option.
Yeah.
Yeah, he also takes his goal very well.
He does.
Yeah. He opens his body.
That's right.
You know.
And the thing is, it's such an odd thing to do.
Yeah.
I'm sort of prepared to give him credit and think...
I think you have to.
He sort of sensed the defender moving away as he knew where the space was and just spun into it.
He only scored 5 goals for Wales in his 42 caps, I think. But they are 5 iconic, very important goals.
Oh, yeah.
The one against Slovakia, that one... is a header against Scotland in the snow. He scores a goal against Moldova to keep us in with a chance of qualifying for the 2018 World Cup. When he scored goals, they were very, very important goals. I mean, I absolutely adore the man.
And I'm sure.
Our fans used to sing Hal Robson-Kanu to the tune of Push It by Salt and Pepper.
Mm.
And when I met him, he had that on his phone, singing his own name.
Love that.
Love that. Yeah.
Absolutely love that. So, I mean, it's still, you know, end to end, still the fast pace and so on. I mean, even Fellaini's brought on.
Grasco, isn't it, I think?
Is that what it was?
I think so, yeah.
Fellaini has a header wide, which as soon when he meets that and in the ball it kind of hits off his head and goes towards the goal, you think, surely, and it flashes wide. All these moments you think it's going to be Wales night, isn't it?
Yeah. And we started to look quite comfortable, I thought. And then obviously the third goal. Now, I think you could argue that the third goal is actually a better goal.
Yeah, it's a beautiful goal.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Ramsey's involved. I mean, Ramsey has an absolutely fantastic game. And I went back and I reread a lot of the match reports. And everyone's saying this is the best game he's ever played, you know, including for Arsenal. Because I think he sets up 5 chances on his own. He's everywhere. Never gives the ball away. He has a fantastic game. So it's a beautiful goal. The third one, Sam Vokes. But what I love about it, this is discussed in some detail in the Johnny Owen film, Don't Take Me Home. It's 5 minutes to go. Now, Gunter, it's game management time, really, by then. So he's got the ball to the byline. And the camera pans to Coleman, who mouths, and you can lip read it, don't cross that fucking ball, Christopher. And he does, and then we're 3-1
So it could have been his David Ginola.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so
it's a phenomenal header from
him. So you can lip read him. That is exactly what he says. And then suddenly we're 3-1 up, and it's in front of the Wales fans, so everyone's pouring down the sort of the aisle to get to the advertising hoardings. And it's just chaos.
Mm.
Now, one thing, before I forget, I have to say this because it made me laugh so much. You know how Le Keep's
match player ratings are notoriously stingy.
Hmm.
So they're famous. I don't think they've ever given a 10 ever.
No, I think they've given 10 or 11 tens or something.
It's very few. Because the Dusan Tadic got one for Ajax away to Real Madrid. And I think this when that came out, didn't it, that they're very stingy.
But when Wales played...
They've got gradings of brilliance that are imperceptible to humans.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically... A normal footballer having the best game of his life will get 6.5.
Yeah, I talked to Philippe Auclair about this, and it is absurd. And when Wales played France in November 2017 in a friendly, I went to the game in Paris, and on the Eurostar back, I picked up a copy of The Keep. They were giving our players nit 1, 0, Gareth Bale gets 2. You know. It's actually, I thought, well, it must be out of 3 or something. Yeah. Because we get zeros across the board.
Must be golf scores.
Yeah.
This guy's got -2.
So anyway, Wales Online, which is the online version of the Western Mail, which is Wales's national newspaper, to say they get carried away, I looked at the Wales Online player ratings. Everyone gets man of the match. And all of the players are given 11 out of 10.
Wonderful.
And the keep still going. Aaron Ramsey, 3.5.
Yeah, exactly.
So in the way that, you know, you'd see it. Remember the news around Press Pack?
Mm.
So then you'd have little kids reviewing films. And what was so funny about it is obviously you haven't really got much of a critical faculty when you're 10.
Mm.
So they would send kids out and they'd say, I thought the plot didn't make any sense. And the acting was bad, but the special effects are great. So I give the film 11 out of 10. So I reread the West Mail player ratings. They start off with Wayne Hennessy, Starman, 11 out of 10. I thought, I suppose he made some important saves. Neil Taylor, Starman, 11 out of 10. I thought, I suppose he had that. And then I realised that the whole team gets it. But then, bearing in mind that Aaron Ramsey was clearly the best player...
Hmm.
I thought they're going to give him 20 out of 10. No. But no, it's just a plain,
same as
plain all 11 out of 10.
Yeah, there you are, you see. And of course, Wales were beaten by Portugal in Lyon 2-0. I was at that game myself. But they went as further than they could or should, if you see what I mean. But it was a phenomenal tournament.
It sort of shows that, you know, when you think of the Danish in 92 and the Greeks in
2004,
even South Koreans in 2002, I think if you've got a very, very tightly knit group of players, it's sort of our form in the friendlies leading up to the tournament had been quite bad. And I thought, you know, God, we're going to get stuffed here because all of the momentum we had in qualifying had petered out. So we lost to Holland out in Amsterdam. I think we drew in Northern Ireland and we lost to Sweden as well, I think, from memory. So... You know, we had this fantastic momentum. I remember thinking, God, if only we could have played this tournament in November 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And it had seemingly petered out. And I thought, crumbs, we're in trouble here. But what happens, I think, is that teams develop momentum during a tournament. So, you know, we played, and the Welsh squad was stationed in Dinard. And they were and they did a lot of things right that the English sort of copied in 2018. Mm-hmm. So I think is it Ian Mitchell, the sports psychologist, who's now with England, had been with Wales for Euro 2016, and also because the players were allowed to mix. You talk about the England team at the World Cup in 2010 being.
No, I mean, they got it wrong horrendously.
You know,
but England
cooped up in their hotels and being very bored knowing. Yeah. And we didn't make any of those mistakes. And what those players always say, whether it's Bale or Ramsey or David Cottrell or Chris Gunter, the whole squad always say it was like being on holiday, on a lad's holiday, but with 30 of you, with the game every few days.
Yeah.
And they just loved every second of it.
Yeah.
And I think Coleman's a huge part of that. And also I think, that team had come through, the loss of Gary Speed. Mm. So they'd been through an awful lot. They'd played a lot together. And I think, I'm not sure if, I don't know if Ryan Giggs has managed to foster the same sort of team spirit. But if you do have that team spirit, you can actually play above yourselves
very much
in
so.
A tournament.
Ellis, it's been fascinating talking to you about that one.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, maybe after the Euros, if they do go ahead, of course, at the time of recording, we assume they are. You know, maybe in a few more stories from the Wales national side, of course. Jonathan, thank you very much. Ellis, it's been an absolute pleasure, as we say. Do check out theblizzard.co.uk for more stories like that. Thank you very much for listening to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. We'll see you next week for another great game from football.
First pass on the viral and he plants it into the corner of the net. Unbelievable.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.